Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free and talk about how we can make things right. I love this song. This is why I chose it as my theme song, about being points of light and about knowing what the right thing is to do and doing it in our own lives and doing it in the world and making the world a better place. And that's really why I do this radio show, is because I want to give you the information so that you can tell what is the right thing to do with regards to toxics, how we can identify toxic chemicals that are making everybody sick, and what we can do so that we can all be healthier, happier, think more clearly, just have more productive lives because we're not being harmed by toxic chemicals. Today, we're going to be talking about indoor air quality. And my guest is Jillian Pritchard-Cook. She's the founder of Wellness Within Your Walls. And she specializes in addressing the tight box syndrome. Now, you know, I haven't talked about this in a long time. This idea, I remember when I first started doing this work, that there was a time when the walls of our houses were built to be leaky, I guess is a good word, where they weren't built tight. And so there was air exchange between the outside and the inside. And then back in the 70s, we had the energy crisis. And so suddenly it became an issue to save energy on home heating. And everybody started caulking and closing up those little spaces. And so what happened was that suddenly all those toxic things that were in our homes, which had been kind of leaking out, suddenly became an issue. And we came up with the phrase indoor air pollution at that point. So Jillian is a interior designer. I want to make sure I get that right. She'll correct me if I was wrong, because there's an interior decorator and interior designers. They're two different things. and she is specializing in looking at what is outgassing from home interior products, so that now that we're in this tight box of the way our buildings are now, that they're building up, and how can we reduce the amount of outgassing? How can we be aware of outgassing? How can we choose products that don't outgas? She does some other things too, but that's the one that's of most interest to me on this show today. But we'll talk about lots of other things that have to do with them. With decorating as well. Hi, Jillian.
Morning, Deborah. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
First, I want to say I love Wellness Within Your Walls. I love that as a name. And I just immediately gravitated to that when I saw it.
Well, we took some time to really think through when we were naming our standard, and it really says it all. So
it does. It really does.
We're thrilled that you like it.
Thank you. So tell us, how did you get interested in this subject?
Well, for me, it was very organic. I was involved in sustainability and really didn't have a firm understanding of wellness within your walls as it relates to everybody's homes. But the organic nature of this was I was very involved with sustainability in the last 20 years, and about 10 years ago, a little less than 10 years ago, I was invited to participate in the first LEED certified home in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
LEED had been around for a while as a commercial program, and a commercial certification, and a real dear friend of mine, Laura Turner Seidel, and her husband, Rutherford Seidel, decided that they wanted to participate not only in this program, but have their home be somewhat of a show house to the public and different organizations to help educate on sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us approached it from three different directions. But my direction initially was defined as sustainability with Laura, and her husband Rutherford approached it from the standpoint of energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was involved in the project, unfortunately, I was diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer. And
wow.
I realized that if I shared that with Laura, she would do what friends do. She would have said, oh, you need not be involved in this and step back and take care of yourself. But I didn't, so I chose not to tell her, and I stayed involved, and my entire focus on the project shifted from sustainability and energy efficiency to health. And my first question when I was diagnosed with the cancer was, where did it come from?
Yeah.
And as an interior designer, I had been involved in projects for, at that time, over 25 years, that I was required by my contract to be on a site during times when they were most toxic, and
right.
really had not paid much attention to that. So knowing the toxins I was exposed to and the type of rare cancer that I had, it became very much a mission to figure out how we could reduce the toxins in that first LEED certified house. And LEED does a great job, especially on the gold and platinum level. But most programs out there at that time didn't really pay much attention to the wellness side of it. I mean, there was education in place about what lead was doing as it related to paint in old homes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have really addressed the asbestos problem, but there's so many other problems that have not yet been revealed. But with the right kind of research and working with the many different groups in the United States that have become part of this wellness movement, Wellness Within Your Walls was established more as a partner to other entities in the industry. With the main focus being on wellness. So the genesis, if you will, for the Wellness Within Your Walls standard really came from that one particular project. So it was my cancer was, crazy as it sounds, a blessing in disguise.
Well, I always say that, too, because I didn't have cancer, but I started doing my work because I became extremely chemically sensitive, and people didn't even know what that was back in 1978. But it's a difficult thing. A lot of people have a very difficult time with it, and it certainly defined my life since then, but in a very good way that it led me to, as with you, to be able to see that there are things that are dangerous and toxic in the world, and that we can do something about it once we become aware that they're there and that they're affecting us and that we have alternatives. So we have a similar path. Could you, just for a second, explain for our listeners how sustainability, I'm very familiar with sustainability too, and it's a bigger picture, but it doesn't always contain being concerned about health because other issues are... Go ahead and tell us your experience of that.
Well, the word sustainability is a fantastic word, and
yeah.
And it is overused, but most of the words that are attached to the green building movement or the wellness movement are overused, and in many cases there is the conversation of greenwash, which I know you've featured from time to time on your radio show. But sustainability as it relates to health, unfortunately, you can be very sustainable in regards to how you harvest wood for manufacturing
right.
of homes and furniture. But if you don't finish the process with paints and stains that are no VOC or low VOC using a positive gassing off method, then really the conversation of sustainability is just a one-sided conversation. It's just that. It's that you've done right by the trees and you've done right by Mother Nature to a certain degree. But if you don't carry it all the way through, as cradle to cradle refers to it as a life cycle,
right.
then it's really... you're mitigating the good work you started by finishing the product with something that is actually, in the end of the day, maybe not as harmful to the atmosphere because of the gassing off and the time it takes. It is harmful in many respects over many, many months or years, but to the human body, just instant exposure to those chemicals on a sustainable piece can start the change of your cells going from a healthy cell to a precancerous cell, for an example, to finally a cancerous cell.
Yeah.
So the conversation of sustainability, it needs to be had at the same time as the conversation of wellness and health and off-gassing and vapors and fumes and chemicals, harmful chemicals.
I totally agree. We need to go to break. And I just want to say that for me, having studied sustainability and applied a lot of it, that I came back to focus on toxics because I think that's the first step to sustainability. And we can talk about that more, too. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jillian Pritchard Cook. She's the founder of Wellness Within Your Walls, and she's at wellnesswithinyourwalls.com. Jillian, before we go on, I just want to say again what I said before the break about toxicity. Being non-toxic, addressing toxic issues is the first step to sustainability, because I think that everything else that sustainability encompasses, energy efficiency, sustainable resource management, all those things, they're all just as important. But to me, I actually was including sustainability in my own standards for many years. And then I decided I really needed to focus on toxics, because so many people working in the field of sustainability don't include that. And they're looking at the environmental effects, but not the human within that environment. And I think that we're all part of life and that we need to be looking at all of that. And every time we use a toxic chemical, it goes into the environment as well. So that's where I start. And then once things are not toxic, then it's great for them to be sustainable in other ways as well.
I thoroughly agree. And I think that so much of this is a dialogue, and being able to make available to the consumer at large the concept that they do have choices. They may not be seeing those choices every day as it relates to labeling, which is a huge issue in this country. But if they can identify what the harmful chemicals are through different organizations throughout the United States, then they can be part of the dialogue and they can be part of the choices. And at the end of the day, it's tried and true that we really do vote with our pocketbook, don't we?
Yes,
so if we
do.
We start making these choices to stay away from products that are toxic and that can cause harm to every age group, and specifically the young, which is one of the age groups that just concerns me the most, because they cannot speak for themselves. And their parents are being sold through marketing campaigns all kinds of things that are not healthy for children that are, in many cases, under the age of even 8 years of age, which 15 years of age, depending on what's being brought into the home. So I think that the dialogue that goes along with what you're saying about it's more than sustainability, that it is health. We have to be able to channel the information to the public at large so that they can not only make the right choices, but be part of the dialogue. I use the farm-to-table example more often in our credit courses that we offer to ASID and AIA. That it's pretty simple at the end of the day. When you look back 10 years ago on the farm-to-table concept, it was just people were sort of getting it and sort of talking about it, and now all of a sudden it's in mainstream America. You know, restaurants hang their hat on the fact that they're farm-to-table, and I do think that that's what the wellness movement is really starting to stir in, not in this just in this country, but internationally. You know, everybody's got that concern of, why is cancer on the rise? Why is autism on the rise? And a number of other known diseases. And more often than not, it does go back to the toxins.
Yes.
And, of course, genetics comes into play. But the toxins more and more are becoming identified as being responsible for so much of what the medical industry is dealing with.
Yes, that is absolutely true. That's been my experience as well. So you've mentioned that you have a standard for wellness within your walls, and tell us about that.
Well, it's actually pretty simple. There are seven folks that are part of the Wellness Within Your Walls team, And we really kept coming back to the concept that certification can be complicated. And often certification can be not real. You know, folks can come up with just about any kind of certification based on any set of criteria. So we wanted to make it simple and usable. And the three categories we identified was natural, sustainable, and responsible. And not all natural is good. You know, there's formaldehyde is a natural product and chemical, and it's good in certain cases. Our bodies produce formaldehyde, but it's bad in certain cases when it's used in adhesives and in many building products when it gets to a certain level. So our program defines the word natural and the good that's from natural. Water is a chemical, and it's natural, and it's a good thing, especially if it's purified. Air is natural, and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But radon is natural, and it's not a good thing. Same thing it can be said for lead and asbestos and a number of other products that are out there. And we wanted to make sure that when we created that part of the category, that dialogue was going to exist so that we could identify that many years ago, people did not know lead was bad for you. Now lead is not in paint. So let's take that concept and look at all the things that are out there that might be natural that are not good for you, and let's have the conversation, let's have the dialogue, let's weed our way through the information and make the column to the left on what is not good for you versus what is good for you that's natural, instead of just looking at the word natural on packaging and assuming that it's natural, it's good for you. Sustainability, not all recycling and reusing is a fantastic concept, but not all that you recycle is good. If it was bad the first time, why on earth would we recycle it a second time? So that's what the sustainable category speaks to. It speaks to responsibly taking plant life, as in trees or bamboo, not clear cutting, you know, and having an understanding of what the outcome is when you clear cut a forest of bamboo. Bamboo is the latest, greatest product that's being pushed in the furniture industry and also in the textile industry. And if it's done responsibly through plantation growth, then I'm all for bamboo. But if you're going to clear cut a forest and take the animals away from their habitat, then that's not exactly sustainable, and it's not a sustainable product. It becomes a non-sustainable product if that happens. And then the category that I like the most, that I had the hardest time wrapping my hands around, is the responsible category.
Okay, we need to go to break. We need to go to break. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. I know you want to talk about that, and I want to talk about that too. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Julian Pritchard-Cook. She's the founder of Wellness Within Your Walls, and her website is wellnesswithinyourwalls.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Julian Pritchard-Cook. She's founder of Wellness Within Your Walls, and she's at wellnesswithinyourwalls.com. Julian, before the break, we were talking about your three categories, and the third one is responsibility, controlling toxins responsibly through accountability. So tell us about that.
Well, that's the one I had the most trouble with when we were creating it, because originally we just didn't want to discuss toxins. We were kind of like ostriches with our heads in the sand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized with the help of our fabulous group that's a huge mistake, because we live in a toxic world. We no longer can say that there's a place on this planet that's not affected by toxins in some way. I mean, the weather is a perfect conversation, which is obviously a separate conversation. So we created this level of the standard, this category, to say, okay, yes, there's toxins. You are going to encounter toxins all day, every day. You could potentially be encountering toxins during the 8 hours of sleep a night, depending on what your mattress is made of. So let's have a really strong dialogue about what those toxins are and how you can mitigate them if they're in your life. I mean, a simple example of that is you might be ordering something off the internet and you open up the box when it arrives at your home and you just are overcome by some level of vapor that might have to do with the textile finishing process. It might have to do with the paint that was used, the sealant that was used, the fire retardants that might be on them. And so what do you do at that point? Do you send it back? Do you seal it? Do you take it and put it in a garage for a certain number of days with windows open and off-gas it? That became the real focus for our team as it relates to everyday living and the accountability all the way at the beginning of the food chain with the manufacturers to the end of the food chain with the consumer and the purchasing.
This is a really interesting part of it for me that you're doing, because it's a little different from my approach, and yet I think is a complementary one, because I'm always saying, how can we find things that have no off-gassing, no toxic chemicals? And yet we are faced with, I get these questions all the time. Well, I bought this or I bought that, and how do I get rid of the odor? And so let's just start our discussion of off-gassing by having you explain what it is.
Well, off-gassing even can take place with natural products that do not involve man-made chemicals. For example, I ordered for a client recently a mattress from a reputable mattress company that claims everything to be organic. And I had that mattress show up into our warehouse, and we unwrapped it, and it smelled like a barnyard. And, mm-hmm.
Well, no, I understand. I get people write to me and they say, oh, I bought this organic thing and it has an odor to it. and it's not necessarily a toxic odor, but it's something like for example, for myself, I can't use anything that's made out of latex, even if it could be 100% natural organic latex, and I can't tolerate the odor. Even though it's not toxic, I just can't tolerate the odor of latex. So I can understand that, like, I have no problem buying organic cotton, which has a little stronger smell than non-organic cotton that's been processed more. But some people don't like that smell, or they don't want it. And so go ahead. So then what did you do with it?
Which is so much a part of the dialogue. You know, that's why when you identify the category of natural within the standard, it feeds into the category of sustainable, which feeds into the category of responsible. So even responsibility isn't necessarily always related to harmful toxins. The conversation of responsibility is related to the big picture as we see it, not just natural, but also those products that are made man-made. And, we'd be really kidding ourselves if we thought that we could live without man-made materials that involve toxins. There, at this moment, I do not know of an adhesive that is, and certain sealants that have to withstand certain levels of traffic and maintenance, specifically in institutions like hospitals and schools, unless you use these toxins. And the reason is because there hasn't been something produced to date. Not that the scientists aren't working on it. I recently was involved in a summit put on by UL Industries, and I was fascinated by the direction that the green scientists are going in, and up until recently, they didn't even offer green science in colleges. Now it's become a new department, and thankfully so. That in itself is going to help us deal with the accountability as it relates to being responsible through the manufacturing process. So, it'd be great to say that we could all just suck the rubber out of a tree and it would glue everything together, and the natural gassing off for a natural rubber is a lot less than a lot of the adhesives that are coming out of the chemical industry. But there lies in the middle probably something that hasn't been created yet. I mean, the paint industry, they just really took the bull by the horns. 7 years ago, 8 years ago, when we worked on EcoManor, we used no VOCs and low VOCs, mainly because of the maintenance. And 3 years later, Benjamin Moore, you know, jumped on board with, we got to get these VOCs out. And then right next to them, big names like Sherwin-Williams. And you can now go to some of the biggest building shows in America, and you can find no VOC products. There's another company, Imperial Paint, that's found a way to have it be the best it can be for hospitals and for institutions like schools that are no VOC. So the good news in this, and why I now find the responsible category to be probably my most favorite category, is the onus is being put back on the manufacturers. It's being put back on the retailers, those that are bringing it into their homes, the consumer, the end user. They're all having a dialogue. And that happened because the green scientists got together with the manufacturers and said, hey, we got to figure this out. And they are.
I see that. I do see that's going on in the world today, that we have many more possibilities than we've ever had before. And that's the direction we're going. We need to go to a break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is Jillian Pritchard Cook. She's founder of Wellness Within Your Walls at wellnesswithinyourwalls.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jillian Pritchard Cook. She's founder of Wellness Within Your Walls, and you can visit her website at wellnesswithinyourwalls.com. So Jillian, so now given that we have these products, in particular you're addressing interior home products, given that we have these products that are outgassing, what can we do about it, about the outgassing?
Well, where really that is just what we need to do is understand the time that each of these chemicals need to off gas, and it's extremely complicated because you can have more than one chemical off gassing at a time, and one chemical harmful chemical might take 10 days, but another harmful chemical might take 2 years. So when we talk about off-gassing, it's not that simple. So the best thing to do, we're working on putting together a guide to help maneuver through the minefield of harmful chemicals and exactly what the timing is. But the best thing to do is anything that you bring into your environment, you just make sure that it, you know, you can trust your nose often. And you just need to get it into a space that is very well ventilated, and that children aren't around and animals aren't around, and let it off gas. I mean, mattresses is a perfect example. There are a number of mattress companies out there that promote the best night's sleep ever, but there's a reason for that, you know, because when your body hits this mattress with these foams, they mold themselves to your body, and as you move, they remold themselves to your body. Well, it takes a lot of technology and a lot of man-made chemicals to make that process happen during your 8 hours of sleep. I would say, you know, you start with trying to make the choices not to bring those products into your home. But if you have, you know, then you know, a return mattress policy is non-existent. If you buy a mattress, unless, you know, it's defective in some way, you know, the laws are such that you own that mattress. So really just get not bringing it into the home. But that really relates back to pesticides on your lawn, right? You don't really want your children playing on pesticides and bringing them into your carpets, or your animals bringing them in and then jumping into your two-year-old's bed, and your two-year-old's petting the dog, and the pesticides, you know, are getting everywhere. I mean, it's the whole idea of off-gassing directly links back to the dialogue, and it directly links back to the choices. So my preference is that you would not have to off-gas, but if there are chemicals written in, you know, you can ask for safety data sheets. Most folks don't realize you can go anywhere in the United States to a retailer, and you can ask the question, what is this made of? and you can request
yes, you
the,
can. You
the,
can.
The safety data sheet, but no one totes that or promotes that.
I do.
The average individual, Deborah, you're not average.
I know, but I've been telling people in my books for years to look for the material data safety data sheet. And on my website, when people ask me questions, I often are quoting the material safety data sheets. So they are available. Yes, I agree with you. And people should look at them. But they don't always tell 100% of what's there. The reason I use material safety data sheets is that if you see a toxic chemical on it, then you know it's there. What it doesn't do is guarantee that there are no toxic chemicals in it, because not all the toxic chemicals are on the lists of what needs to be reported.
No, they're not. And they can rewrite the names of them just at a whim. You know, you take a little of this chemical and a little of that chemical and put it together, and you might think that you've gotten to the end of finding out what this harmful chemical is going to do, and then all of a sudden it pops up in a new name and a new entity, and it's very, very difficult to stay ahead of the curve. It's not unlike the pharmaceutical industry in that way. But that's how they make their money. I mean, it is, you know, we are very much in a capitalist society, so really they're not breaking any laws as they are at this time. So, I mean, you have to be ahead of the game and making the decision to first go with a non-toxic approach. Wherever possible, make that non-toxic decision.
I agree.
If you cross that line, that's when the off-gassing comes in. That's when you reduce the living in the tight box, find ways to really ventilate your home. You stay on top of what is coming out of industries like the HVAC, the air and heating industry. They're making tremendous steps in the right direction. They see it as being a big issue with closing these houses up.
Yeah. So I would just add in there that if you have some kind of product that that is giving off some vapors, one thing that you could do is, as Jillian said, you could put it like in the garage or someplace where it has time for those vapors to emit and dissipate before you bring it in the house. And the other thing you can do is seal it in some way. There are some sealants that do, like you could put a sealant for formaldehyde on particle board and it will seal in the formaldehyde and it won't outgas. I also want to give a suggestion there. If you just look up, type into your favorite search engine, NASA outgassing, NASA, like the National Aeronautics Space Administration, NASA. If you type in NASA outgassing, you'll get a lot of links to various sites that talk about, it's the NASA data for how materials outgas. And the reason that NASA has done this is because they're concerned about toxic chemicals in spaceships. And so whatever they put inside a spaceship, they need to know what the outgassing data is. And so you can look up on these sites and see what NASA has to say about how long it takes for a material to outgas. It's very fascinating reading I often am not concerned about this because I'm buying things that don't outgas, and I know that they don't outgas because I've done the research. But if there's any question about whether or not some chemical that you know of outgasses, you can look it up on the NASA site and you'll find out all about the outgassing.
That's a wonderful resource.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they've been researching it as long as I've been writing, for many years. I mean, I think they started doing it when they first started making rockets, when I was 7 years old or something like that. Anyway.
Another option is, if you're moving into a new home, take a warehouse and have all your furniture go to a warehouse first.
Oh, great idea.
Do that with carpeting as well. I think that some of the big carpet industry folks up in Dalton, Georgia, are jumping on the bandwagon where they're making available for large projects spaces where they can have the carpet rolled out. That's a big culprit. I'm all for, like you are, hardwoods everywhere.
Right.
But unfortunately, especially in the commercial world with tenant finish, that's not a first choice. So I think we're going to see more of those types of businesses pop up where you can have off-gassing take place in a controlled environment.
I think that sounds like a great idea. You just, yeah, because, you know, it's, I would prefer, and I know, I think that we're moving in a direction, particularly with green chemistry, where we're going to be reducing the amount of toxic chemicals at the source more and more and more, that that's going to become the standard. I can really see that happening. And particularly the amount of products that are available now versus when I started 30 years ago is amazing. We're really going in a direction. And I think that we will get to a point where we won't have to be concerned about this. But, you know, something like a paint or a finish, it has these chemicals in it so that you can spread the finish on and then it evaporates off. And then you have a finish that you just have the particle part, not the vapor part. And so that can be not very toxic at all. Like after paint has dried, after paint has cured, it's not a toxic exposure. It's the stuff that makes paint liquid that is the VOC. And so the key thing is here that you need to, if that's the way the product works, you need to have that outgassing time. And then often what happens is that you'll buy a piece of furniture or something where the off-gassing time has not occurred. And that's why it's toxic to the user. And so not only do we need to be looking at how can we use less toxic materials, but also if there is outgassing involved, to make sure the manufacturer puts in that time or there's some interim place to put the item so that by the time it ends up to the consumer, it isn't toxic.
Yeah, and it could be as simple as a labeling that has the word cured with a date on it.
I mean, we've adopted
labeling on our products that are in our refrigerator, you know, things that we eat, and we know when our milk is good to drink. I mean, it should be the reverse concept with it was cured on this date.
I love
that. Manufactured on this date, cured on this date. And that alone will start a dialogue. Oh, if you wait a few extra months, you get better curing.
Yeah. I love that. I hope that people will start doing that and that consumers will start asking about that. Because particularly with furniture, you don't know how old the piece of furniture is, so you don't know how long it's been curing.
And I think if folks like the Sustainable Furnishings Council, which is a great group, and NEHB, who represents, you know, all of the building entities in the United States, I think if they could adopt something as simple as that with along with their data sheets, I think we'd be in a much better place as it relates to toxins in the interior environment.
I think so, too. Well, we only have 10 seconds left, so thank you, Jillian, so much. This has been very interesting. My guest is... Well, there we got to go.
Thank you
She's
so much.
Wellness within your
Take
walls.
Take care, Deb.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.